Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to another episode of Voices for Excellence. I am your host, Dr. Michael Connor, CEO and founder of the Agile Evolutionary Group, and of course, the proud host of VFE. And yes, this is a part of the fourth annual Black Excellence Series, where we are highlighting Black excellence across the country and different verticals within the ecosystem. And today's guest, the vertical that we're going to be focusing on today is, yes, executive leadership and the superintendent role. And today we are having, or we are glad to have, Dr. Simone Griffin. Yes, I met Dr. Griffin. Let's see, this was in June 2025, where Dr. Griffin and I, we were both selected to be PDK Distinguished Fellows, PDK International Distinguished Fellows. And I got to meet Dr. Griffin at our convene in June, and just what a dynamic mindset perspective when it comes to education. And that was at that time, Dr. Griffin, I remember you had said, "Mike, don't say nothing, but I think I'm about to become a superintendent." I remember that conversation. And look how the Lord turns everything out. Yes, Dr. Griffin is the proud superintendent of Benton Harbor Area Schools in Benton Harbor, Michigan. But moreover than that, she's just an extraordinary educator who really does work for transformation. So we are proud to host Dr. Simone Griffin here on VFE, but more importantly, highlighting Black excellence during Black History Month. Dr. Griffin, how are you today, good sister?
Thank you. Thank you. It is an honor to be here. I'm super excited about this opportunity to just talk about educational excellence in our communities. So thank you for having me.
Oh, absolutely, Dr. Griffin. And to my audience, this is going to be an extraordinary episode because, again, we're really going to start to unpack various threads. I like to say some of the core nodes in education that needs to be addressed intentionally, bold, but more importantly, unapologetically. So, but Dr. Griffin, I had said at the outset that you are a PDK International Distinguished Fellow. You are definitely a recognized leader in the Midwest, and now the new, or not so new, superintendent for Benton Harbor Area Schools. But for my audience that do not know Dr. Simone Griffin, what song defines your leadership signature and this paradigm of the 22nd century?
Ooh, I would have to say Diana Ross, "I'm Coming Out."
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah.
That song.
Yeah, I would have to say that song because it's not just about Dr. Griffin or Simone coming out. It's about our kids coming out, really cultivating voice, agency, empowerment, and equity. So coming out and modeling what that looks like for our urban community that I serve. Yeah, it's all about that instructional excellence, access and opportunity. Yeah, making sure that every stakeholder group is aware that there's a whole world out there and they're not excluded from it.
Absolutely. And Dr. Griffin, first of all, Diana Ross, yes, you want to talk about Black excellence. There you go with that. That's a history course, I should say, two semesters by itself. But you hit on some key threads, right, or key themes that I want to highlight: agency and voice. And Dr. Griffin, when we talk about agency and voice, and I look at this intentional shift of the education model, the whole model. And that's why, you know, I created the 22nd century education model so that now we can have those intentional and strategic shifts within instruction, within curriculum, within operations, where truly our most important customers, i.e. families and students, have the necessary agency and voice, and they feel empowered within their learning organizations. But you highlighted this word that I think that executive leaders need to do more often, specifically when we talk about executive leadership in the context of instruction, modeling what that is. And what I love about your work, and to my audience, Dr. Griffin is not only in schools, she's actually providing feedback to leaders and teachers for what she's seeing in classrooms, so that now that feedback can be implemented with a level of vitality, but more importantly, this oversight, feedback for growth. I love that. Instructional excellence. And again, when we talk about our students coming out, yes, they have to have the agency and the voice to do that. But Dr. Griffith, you have experienced a high level of success within your leadership trajectory, where now you are at the superintendent level, where you are the superintendent of schools for Bend Harbor Area Schools. But within your transition to this role, Dr. Griffith, what unique perspectives have you gained about executive leadership that both new and veteran leaders can underscore within their role?
Ooh, that's a good one. I would have to say relationships before rules, right? Because although you have to have high expectations and we come in all gung-ho, you really have to be very strategic and intentional in a listening and learning mode. You know, we all have to be, when we talk about being lifelong learners, that's super critical environment. All the way up to this role, you've got to hear from as many stakeholders as possible so that you can get as much as possible in terms of knowledge about the lay of the land, the culture, their identity, how they came to be where they are, how they get from where they are to where they need to be. But also identifying some of those gaps, right? There are going to be some patterns and some gaps. And then your expertise has got to come in and say, hey, here's what I've seen. Let's co-create what the strategic plan looks like going forward. Here's what you said in terms of the strengths, in terms of the pride, in terms of the culture. But here's what the academic outcomes are saying. And so let's chart this new course together, ensuring that we have high expectations for student outcomes. And that means high expectations for every stakeholder that deals with those students too. So that's me, my central office team, principals, teachers, support staff, parents, and even the students. Everybody's got to have some skin in the game for what it looks like.
Absolutely. And that skin in the game, I always like to say, Dr. Griffin, is accountability. And you gave a textbook answer around what I call the cycle of continuous improvement and the three stages, the first three stages of the cycle of continuous improvement: setting the direction, assessing the needs, and then creating the strategic plan. Those are the first three within that whole cycle of continuous improvement. And I loved how you said relationships before rules, right? And I think, you know, within any type of large scale or macro level change management process, as you are entering as a new superintendent or even looking at strategic adaptations and shifts within your learning organizations, I always reference back to one of my professors at Harvard, Michael Tushman. He always states this, that it's easy to change the hardware. And when I look at the educational equivalency, it's easy to change curriculum. It's easy to change the instructional framework. It's easy to change operational procedures within your learning organizations, but it's the hardest thing to change is the software, i.e. the mental models and mindsets to be aligned so that now they become a shared mental model, a shared mindset. And you underscored that, right, within your entry, where you mentioned it, the voices of your core stakeholders being a part of it, i.e. this co-creation, co-design of the strategic plan so that now we have this shared mental model and this shared mindset to be able to move the transformation cycles in this accelerated and forward manner. That's why I said, Dr. Griffin, you gave a textbook answer, a theoretical answer, but a much more simplified answer that my audience can digest. But Dr. Griffin, I always contend that, and you exhibit this when I met you in June all the way to, you know, now, right? But you always modeled being a chief executive officer, superintendent, CEO, as the lead leader of the learning organization, right? And this includes having deep knowledge and understanding of your core stakeholders that's promulgating the vision within your learning organization. But embedded in every innovative and transformational design, right, there has to be sustained capacity, building capacity, capabilities. I always like to say shared human capital. But within your learning organization, and also for executive leaders out there as well, superintendents, assistant superintendents, even we have ed tech companies where they have vice presidents and directors of partnerships. How did you, and I think that there's this interface and even part and parcel into parallel silos, how do you prioritize human capital development, specifically what you're doing as the lead learner in Benton Harbor area schools?
Oh, good question. I would have to say one of the major things I did when I came and got the role, I kind of got it a little bit later in the summer at the end of July, and the district was in the middle of contract negotiations with the teacher union. And so I came to the table already knowing that I needed to close that deal in order to move forward with what the year would look like, because you have to do that in collaboration with them. They're one of the major stakeholders within the district outside of the board, right? And so because I had been in those seats, I mean, that plays a major role a lot of the times. And this is no shade to, you know, superintendents that have not sat in the teacher seat. You know, I started out in the 90s, late 90s as a day-to-day sub and kind of worked my way up, you know. And it helps to remember those experiences because it keeps you humble, empathetic, and collaborative when you're working with teachers that are still in those seats. Because even we have to admit at this level, if you're not a teacher after the pandemic, then you got only a little bit that you can pair in terms of experiences that align with theirs. Well, that notwithstanding, I had to come to the table being absolutely honorable to what they experience as teachers. And what any teacher wants and any professional wants is respect. You know, doing the one-on-ones with the board leadership and doing them with the union leadership and having those conversations, it really, I laid the foundation for hearing them, right, around what was really troubling them and concerning them. They hadn't felt heard regarding curriculum choices. They hadn't felt heard regarding vendors and partnerships that had been created. They weren't heard when it came to respect from students and parents and leadership in the building. And so I had to bring those things transparently to the table and say, it's going to be different under my leadership. And let's talk about what that looks like. I know you guys want accountability. So let's have a shared understanding. Why don't you tell me more? And I'll tell you what I can provide to lead the effort for support, actual accountability support as a superintendent. Number one, I'm going to make sure that you're respected at every level. There's going to be accountability for parents, for how they enter buildings, leaders, and how they support you and your voice in infractions and things like that. You know, understanding what it feels like to be disrespected. And so starting from that standpoint, being empathetic and being a great listener helps bring to pass something that is collaborative. And the other thing was, because they didn't feel heard, I gave them an opportunity when we closed the union contract, you know, actually 2-3 weeks beforehand, was giving them a curriculum committee. So rather than bring you to the table when we're at the end of a curriculum review cycle, why don't you guys come to the table with your team and we'll bring some stakeholders and we'll collaborate monthly about it year round. That way there's no surprises. You can help us co-create what the review cycle looks like, give us your opinions and your ideas, and we bring in the research and the data together. So we co-create it. So the curriculum committee. Then of course we have HR that works with them and hearing from them around what it means to truly support teachers and staff in this work. And those could be affinity groups. It could be trauma-informed research best practices, right? Making sure that their wellness plans, that's something that I brought, that I have my student support team working on and HR. So everybody should have a wellness plan from me all the way to our custodial workers. So we have a mental wellness committee that is helping put that together, because the socio-emotional status of our staff is just as important as those of our students. You talk about secondary trauma. We have to understand it. You know, if we're going to mitigate teacher burnout and keep the teachers that we have to start with the human standpoint. We have to start with their strengths rather than their deficits. And so I model those practices with them and then implore and charge them to do those same things with our kids.
Great, great, great. And Dr. Griffin, very intentional, right? Because I love the fact that, and this truly is a design thinking approach. Right. When you the first step, or I should say the first principle within design thinking is empathy, understanding the core needs of your customers, understanding the core needs of the people that you're serving, and then being able to design in accordance to those specific needs. And very intentional where you took that first principle of design thinking, empathy, understanding your stakeholders, understanding your teachers, and being able to design in accordance to their needs, and having, I always like to say, that level set of building human capital from one another. It's not more of this lines of this top-down bureaucratic approach of here's the sustained learning, and here how we're going to build capacity within the learning organization. But you took that reverse approach. I always like to say kind of like this reverse engineering approach where you're working backwards, where now that the voices of your teachers, of your leaders are realized for professional learning within your learning community. Very, very intentional. Again, goes back to what you stated before, being able to listen and act upon critical needs or the essential needs for your stakeholders and teachers. But we know, Dr. Griffin, we're in unprecedented times, right? Very unique. And I always now education, the whole education model, the whole education ecosystem is experiencing this level of uncertainty and this high level of volatility. But you just have this natural sense of calmness within your leadership. Right. It could be a big blizzard and a big storm. And Dr. Griffin's, she's just like this to my audience. You would think it's sunny and 85 out. Right. The way Dr. Griffin responds to some essential issues or even problems of practice. But Dr. Griffin, how do you anchor stability in this volatile ecosystem? But I want you to, that's the first part. The second part is, how do you define stability from this 22nd century education lens?
And it's taken some work. You know, I'm calm today, but if you'd see me in August and September, you know, it would look very, very different. I've had to be adaptable and sort of a chameleon in this environment, because really this district, it's not an anomaly. We're having some of the same challenges, but they are certainly really, really very elevated, very, very concentrated in such a very small community. Right. And so in order to create the sense of sustainability and stability, it's important that I'm always able to keep the eyes on the prize, and that's our students, making student-centered decisions, and then making sure that I'm always telling the why behind the what, right? Because even though this is a turnaround, when you think about change management, everybody knows that nobody likes to be changed except for a wet baby. And so that, especially a district like mine that has had a lot of turnover at the superintendent level. And then at every level, there's a lot of in and out. So with that, the stability is to make sure that you're constantly speaking to the vision and mission. You're constantly sticking to the practices that support them, because the money, even when we make economic decisions, the money follows the vision. I can tell, and this has been my training, even before I got into this role, I can tell by looking at your budget where your priorities are, because the money follows where you really think things are important or a priority when it comes to how you spend your money and your fiscal stewardship, right? But it's also making sure in the stability, you have to have a disposition of calm that we can handle anything. And so that means making sure that there's transparency in communication so you can mitigate anxiety. So as I said before, no matter what I'm doing, I give the why behind the what. And then it's even being more sensitive to the rollout process, right? I have these big ideas. I want a proficiency goal campaign. But when I'm looking at all of my cabinet ideas and the goals, that we're not rolling out all these things at one time, right? I'm going to overwhelm them, because when you think about the plate of the responsibilities for principals and teachers, they've taken on so much more socio-emotionally in addition to the academic piece. So constantly thinking about as a superintendent, okay, I know if I got SES having expectations of them to make sure kids are in school through this attendance incentive, then I also have to be cognizant of what does academics need to look like. Or maybe I wait to roll this out and I bring the union or those stakeholders that'll be impacted into the conversation so that they can feel a part of the process before the rollout actually happens. Because you can remain true to the vision of a particular project or an initiative, but you have to make sure that the stakeholders that are impacted have some input, right? And so that's being very strategic and intentional, because the goal is to mitigate as much anxiety, challenge, burnout as possible. So many times it's input in timelines and maybe not getting all of your initiatives the first year. Maybe you schedule them out, but you make certain that instability, that you create calm by the way you respond. And that is having an open door policy. You know, I do have to have boundaries in place being a superintendent of a small district, but I have to also understand that if it's something really, really critical, that they can come and see me. Now, usually 9 times out of 10, I'm going to pivot them back to who they need to talk to, but it's also giving them a sense of calm when crises come up. We've had a few this first semester in my tenure, and then being able to be transparent about it, because no one likes to be gaslit. And it's me making an apology myself. I show them how to feel forward, give each other grace, because I need it, right? This is my first and prayerfully only superintendency. And so with that, I ask and implore, I'm humble in my mistakes. And so I have to demonstrate that for them as well. Give each other grace, give each other kindness as we build this ship together. Right. So that's letting them know that's the stability. Don't worry. Things will go. Just know things are going to go wrong and be OK with messing up. That's how you get them comfortable with engaging in the risk of, you know, growing student outcomes. Because you give them freedom to fall. Give them freedom to fail. Just know, I know you're going to. It's OK. We get back up. We check it out. We look at the data and we try again.
Absolutely. Dr. Griffin, that was, again, another textbook answer. And to my audience, Dr. Griffin, we use this as an asynchronous tool for professional learning, i.e. heterogogy, self-directed learning. And to my audience, this is one of the answers that you can actually do a crosswalk analysis with defining change management within a time of uncertainty, a time of volatility, right? And what I loved about the resonating and consistent themes within all your answers, Dr. Griffin, is transparency, right? Communication. I love that. Always communicating the vision. Make ensuring that resources, strategic operating plan, activity sets, and workflows have the alignment to the resources, have an alignment with a direction that we're going into. There will be expected adaptations and strategic lean moves that we're going to have to make, because it's not a linear evolution, but more aligns is this adaptive evolution with the vision as the outcome. Dr. Griffin, I always give this really simplistic definition of change management. And I always say that it's a large body of work scaled into parts, but prototyped over time. And the answer that you provided said, hey, we might not get to this strategy this year. We might not get to this work this year, but we will get to it next year. I love the logic model sequence of how you identified that we are going to get to the work. It's aligned to the vision. But again, there's some critical micro steps, incremental steps that we have to achieve to get to that vision over time. Very strategic, because I always say that during this time of volatility, during this time of uncertainty, we have to be able to have a vision that we need to accomplish. And how we get there, there's going to be expected, you know, detours that we're going to have as a learning organization. I always say that we move from VUCA. VUCA is the 21st century, to now UNVICE, which is 22nd century. What does UNVICE mean? Uncertainty, volatility, intersectionality, complexity, and it's going to be exponential. But speaking about this whole 21st century shift to this 22nd century lens, I always say that we always talk about 21st century readiness, right? This whole 21st century readiness. But when we think about who our generational learners are, i.e. Generation Alpha, and we just welcomed Generation Beta, January 1, 2025, we also welcomed the COVID babies because they are first class in kindergarten. So when we think about kind of like this conglomerate of generational learners, the explosion and evolution of artificial intelligence technology, we are seeing a radical economic shift. And if we still are preparing students for 21st century readiness, we're actually creating much of a bigger gap, right, for our students, because they're 22nd century learners. Our kindergartners, Dr. Griffin, they're graduating high school in 2038. That way, and let me give you another stark data point. They're going to be, listen to this. And I said, man, am I going to be around? Hopefully God will not be around. When they retire, it's going to be 2087. So with those, with those economic metrics in mind, from your perspective, what are the operating model challenges that we face? And also, what are the operating models that are the operating model that we have to be able to disrupt with needed designs to modernize educational learning experiences for Generation Alpha and Generation Beta?
I would say a couple of things come to mind. The first thing is the mindset of your staff. They have to have a strengths-based model, right? And mindset. They have to start with what we do know and then cultivate the gaps for what they don't know. That's the kids. Now with the staff, one of the things that's coming up for me this semester is how HR and our leadership, how do we cultivate self-efficacy among our team? When you've had an environment where there have been, double-digit years of low academic achievement, this district has been in a partnership with the state for a number of years, and we just, renewed, they've done in 3 years intervals. When once a school has been removed from, but we're in the bottom fifth percentile. And so the root causes of that, that's impacted, right? In the mindset. And so for me, efficacy is really, really important. Do our teachers believe that they can increase student academic and social emotional achievement? And what does that look like for them and us as a district, right? How do we help cultivate success within them? And that, you know what that is? That's making sure that we have intentional professional development design, right? Making sure that I'm actually right now on the cusp of bringing in coaches for our core content areas. But before we even do that, we have to look at our data, right? What are our performances on our state, national, state, and local assessments, our interim benchmark assessments? So we got the numbers, but then we got to get that qualitative information. So with the evaluation system, getting to do some self-assessment. They have strengths too. So we want them to look at the kids' strengths and have a strengths-based mindset. We've got to have it with our staff. And so being able to have them reflect on their own journey as professionals in this work, show us, according to these questions, where you think you fall in terms of instruction. Are you a whiz with the data, right? Are you the whiz with instructional strategies overall for what that classroom environment and culture has to look like? Are you one who has the strengths in parent engagement? Are you the one who can make sure that in terms of organization and systems, you're that guy? So we have to acknowledge, what strengths do our staff bring to the table? How do we celebrate and help them maintain them and cultivate their greatness in those areas so we can make sure that they're open to leaning into learning about how to cultivate their growth in their areas of gap? And that process helps them with teaching, right? The new words that we're hearing regarding our Generation Beta and 22nd century are skilled up, right? When we talk about those 22nd century skills, data literacy, right? It's not just critical thinking, but it's discernment, right? The whole point of school is not so you can just learn to read to learn, and then you read to discern. Being able to make great decisions based upon the information available, analyze, synthesize, create, design, those kinds of stuff, that's what you have to have no matter opportunity for being college and career ready. We have to open those doors up and making sure our teachers are comfortable with mitigating the risk. You know, they're okay with, you know, fumbling and getting back up and learning. That is the process. You cannot learn without making mistakes. So mitigating that fear so that we can make sure that they're modeling that same risk level and the willingness to try and fail and get back up by giving strategic and timely feedback to our kids, right? We can get out of this situation, but we have to look at what we do well. And then celebrating the teachers, giving them an opportunity to lead PD from those strengths areas, right? If you're the guru for analyzing data in math and quantitative, then why not lead the PLC in that area? confident and we empower them, the more they're going to be willing to try in the areas where they have deficits.
Amazing, Dr. Griffin, because, you know, when I was developing the 22nd century education model, the portrait of a system that has direct relationships, when you think about the seven elements within the portrait of a system, those are the structural and foundational changes within the actual model itself. And then I have the 22nd century systems learner framework that outlined the system shift from the 21st century to 22nd century, including the learner attributes from the 21st to 22nd. What I loved about how you stated, or what you stated, that in order to collectively move a learning organization to have these 22nd century underpinnings, we have to be intentional with the mindset of our stakeholders, where now we have to move to this strength-based model. When you started talking about efficacy, right? Cultivating self-efficacy, cultivating collective efficacy. We know that's number one in Hattie's work, right? His meta-analysis and self-efficacy with that. Because if we don't develop that self and collective efficacy, where we're moving towards a strength-based model within the education ecosystem, we're going to continue to exacerbate gaps, right? And if we continue to exacerbate gaps, specifically preparation gaps, within our students, shifting from the 21st century to the 22nd century, I think that we have to be intentional with the level of efficacy that we have within our organization, learning organizations. I really appreciate that. And kind of under this underpinning for the 22nd century, leading into the next question, Dr. Griffin, I had to make independent mindset shift myself, right? And I continuously have to remind myself, which is great. I always say transformation is not about new learning. Transformation is about the unlearning. And that's the intrinsic hard part that education stakeholders, leaders go through. But two critical areas within the 22nd century, right? Or this 22nd century education model that we really have to focus on. Workforce readiness or workforce development and artificial intelligence, the AI word, right? And now that what I really appreciate is that we're not kicking the can down the road when we talk about workforce development and artificial intelligence integrated strategically into our operating model. But we have to ask leaders, we have to ask instructional leaders, we have to ask executive leaders to now lead this in conjunction with being able to provide managerial oversight over their learning organization. So it's kind of like that two-folded of, yes, we're going to be modeling the learning. We're going to be exhibiting and articulating the vision and the strategy, but also we have to be able to now ensure that our principals are doing this simultaneously. How do we prepare principals for this 22nd century to be instructional leaders with this lens of workforce development and artificial intelligence integration?
Understanding that our leaders have got to be really keen on the unlearning and learning portion, right? So how do we make sure that when there's utilization of AI, when we look at the system blueprint for school leadership, right? Because every school has their own plan that leads into the district strategic plan. It's how are you leaning into your own discomfort, being uncomfortable. You have to get comfortable with being uncomfortable. And so we charge our leaders with, okay, what are the AI systems you're using to help make your role more efficient in this work, right? So it has to be courage over comfort. That's the first thing they have to model. And then leaning into those and be able to share out in some of the best, this is a cohort that we're a team, right? So if there are certain AI, because they've gone to PD, right? They've already done that here. So where are you applying that new knowledge? How are you leaning into your own discomfort and having it impact your overall school goals? Where do we see it?
Yeah. And
much more efficiently, moving from paper to digital, having a dashboard. How can we see it show up as a tangible piece in the work that you're doing to move student outcomes, right? Even if it's, okay, what's the dashboard on wellness? How are you making sure that AI is being used? Like we have a 21st century for lesson planning, where there are videos, right? There are opportunities for problem-based learning, inquiry-based learning. And how are you making sure you're cultivating your own capacity so that you can help support and collaborate with the teachers within your building? You have to show them, oh, this isn't comfortable for me either. Let's go learn together. Or I've learned this and I've become advanced in it. Let me show you how it works and what we do. So it's access, opportunity, exposure, and being comfortable with being uncomfortable. And that's the charge for our leaders, right? Because we already know the teachers are going to be apprehensive, right? Many of our teachers, they think AI is just a way to keep, you know, for the kids to cheat. Well, no, there are some really research-based ways that it can help you with this craft, this pedagogy. And it's imperative that your leader holds you accountable for leaning into that discomfort. And you don't have to, you know, guzzle it, but you do need to taste it, have it resonate, and show up in ways to improve your practice.
Great answer, Dr. Griffith. And I love the fact that you brought up the whole cheating notion with students, because there is a study, and to my audience out there, there's a study that was conducted by Stanford University. And the study actually shows that students are the whole cheating, right? The cheating rate or the percentile of students cheating have basically remained the same before AI took place. So, you know, when we hear educators or when we hear anybody say students are using different artificial intelligence tools and platforms to be able to cheat, I always counter with the Stanford University study. But you're absolutely right. And one thing I really want to clarify this misnomer, because people still have that residual feeling about AI and online instruction from the pandemic, the DC stage of education, I always counter to say that we cannot use emergency-based instruction as a baseline for us to identify specific online tools, adaptive platforms, or artificial intelligence solutions within our classrooms. But you're right, right? And I said it at the outset of the question where transformation is about unlearning. And when you had talked about unlearning to learning, I always say within my keynotes, we have to learn to unlearn to relearn. And this is this whole dynamic of when we think about artificial intelligence integration, when we think about now creating specific new designs that interface workforce development skills, workforce readiness, introducing new CTE pathways that are undergirded with AI, because now we have to, and I love the fact that you said that dashboards, right? We have to move towards, I like to say, big data incorporation, where we're using data. Yep, big data for in a real-time sense, because now when we think about 22nd century readiness or AC 2035, as I state, we have to start looking at PISA data, because now we're not competing against ourselves domestically, but we have to look at it in much of a broader sense, because the world is in our students' hands because of technology and AI and the intentionality, right? The intentionality of our leaders, where they have to have the courage over comfort, right? And I love that, because there is going to be a high degree of people feeling uncomfortable, right? We have to get to, I always like to say, we have to become comfortably uncomfortable in this education ecosystem, because it's not your linear step function, but it's more in the lines that we have to be lean and agile within our practices. So, Dr. Griffin, you made it. Last question. Now, I've known you now for pretty much a year, going on a year and a half now. And I don't know if I can do this, Dr. Griffin, but I'm going to attempt to do this. I'm only going to limit you to three words. Now, listen, there are so many rule breakers. People disrupt this question. I have seen it done in an innovative way, three times, whatever, three to the third power. I always tell my guests, take it as it is. But Dr. Griffin, what three words do you want our audience today, VFE Black Excellence Series, to leave this episode about your thoughts regarding this following phrase? The future of education, AC 2035, is now for Generation Alpha and Generation Beta.
Three words: equity, innovative, courageous.
I'm going to break my own rules. Please elaborate on those three.
Oh, okay. I would start with equity because we know that even in my district, I have kids on level, right? And so how do we make sure that we're pushing them and they're growing? Growth is the name of the game. Now, proficiency, yes, that's the goal, but growth, that's it. And so in order to make sure every kid grows or every staff member grows, we all have different strengths and weaknesses, right? And so equity is about what's the right fit for me at this time. What's the right fit? I'm really good at algebra in these strands, but I'm really struggle with geometry and but in getting the skills and the intervention support for me. My classmate, even though we're in the same class, we have different needs. So equity is critical, right? Because you have to get what your needs are. That's why it's incredibly important to have, you know, benchmarks and diagnostic assessment and constantly assessing and checking students for learning and giving everybody timely and specific feedback, right? They need that. And then I would say, what was my second one? I said,
Innovative.
Okay. Yeah. It's incredibly important to be innovative. And that's where the access and opportunity comes in. Even though we may have discomfort, educational professionals may have discomfort with AI. Kids don't, right? They're far ahead of us. And we cannot be the shackle holding on and you know, strangling and strapping them, shackling them to opportunities that could really advance them and make them globally competitive. So innovation is key to everything that we have to be doing in schools. To sit in rows, we know that's obsolete. We have to have flexible seating, and we should be softening the walls and giving our kids real life opportunities. That's why with field trips, no, we're not just going to the pumpkin patch. Show me what standards going to this pumpkin patch are aligned to. Because we have to soften the walls and connect the classroom learning to real life. That's the innovative piece. Inquiry-based learning, communicating with fifth graders in Africa in my fifth grade class. So I can align those experiences and cultivate my critical thinking. And then courage, you can do anything in life. You can be college ready, career ready, life ready, whether you want to be an entrepreneur, a NASA scientist, a vet, or a teacher. If you don't demonstrate courage. So those are my why. Because if you have those integrally, you can do anything and everything and you'd be unstoppable.
Unbelievable, Dr. Griffin. Equity, innovation, and being courageous. Absolutely. Dr. Griffin, thank you for coming on Voices for Excellence specifically during the fourth annual Black Excellence Series. For anybody in my audience that want to get in contact with you, want to expand on any of the ideas that you presented and some of the textbook concepts in a much simpler form than I can ever articulate, how would they be able to get in touch with you, Dr. Griffin?
Sure. They can reach me on my email. I'm just simone.griffin@bhas.org.
Thank you, Dr. Griffin, and it's always a pleasure. I know we're going to be talking soon, but happy Black History Month, and onward, good sister. You are doing such an impactful and influential job out there in Michigan.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure. Thank you for having me. See you soon, Mike.
Absolutely. And on that note, onward and upward, everybody. Have a great evening.